This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rodden.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sicanet.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome in just after 5 o'clock here on an absolutely gorgeous Wednesday. Suk here, Rob back tomorrow, Buck behind the glass as always. Look at us relatively on time, 5:02. Take that, Jeff Baton Rouge.
Isachi.
That may be the first time I've actually been on time. Like, I love, because the clock is a big deal here because we're not very good at it. And normally I can just turn and, like, defer. And just be like, oh, what do you want from me? Like, that's the good. Blame it on Rob.
Yeah, naturally.
Problem is that when I host and a lot of times I look down, I'm like, ooh, God. It's like 5:09. I'm starting the hot five at 5. But, hey, 5:02, I'm going with this one. I'm like an alcoholic. You know what? Starting today,
You're an on-the-clock guy.
Starting today, I'm on the clock.
Watchdogs over the Metropolitis.
I think it's because Mike Yam's coming on, so I wanted to, like, you know.
Yeah, we like Mike, so we don't want to be on time for him.
Had to keep it tight. Love the Yammer.
Yeah.
Love what the Yammer has going on. Former Pac-12 network man, now of the NFL Network. Talk to him about the NFL draft, because today was supposed to be an NFL draft, like, preview show. Nemec was going to come on, and we were going to nerd out about the NFL, but then, you know, Nemec came down with, I don't know, SARS, or he's got the bird flu, or, you know, I don't know, the COVID something.
Yeah. I think an ear fell off, maybe something like that.
That guy, I'm not certain which person has a more chaotic life. If we're doing 1080 The Fan power rankings, are we going with Meringue and everything that he's got going on? Or are we going with Nemec? Because both of them, I feel like at any given time, there's 17 ailments between them and a family member. There's always something.
And they're always intense. Like Danny, one of Danny's is related to falling out of a helicopter in the military, which is like totally legit. And like, I know that like Nemec had like his eardrum punctured at some point in time. They're always obscure and crazy.
Yeah, it's never anything just like, hey, I've got the sniffles or I'm not feeling very well.
102 degree fever. Sorry, stay at home. No, yeah, it's like, it's something extreme.
I got a case of the trots. Yeah, exactly. It's always something that feels like life and death. Like dun, dun, dun. So no Nemec today, no NFL, but we'll get to the Yammer. We'll talk about that. I'm interested, too, like, we're all the talk of the offensive players. Like, there's no, like, when's the last time you heard of a defensive player being talked about in this draft? Like, we know that the quarterback run is going to be there. We know that everyone's in love with wide receivers. Somehow Brock Bowers, who I think I would rather have than any offensive player in the draft, maybe not one of the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And he's not being talked about as a top 10 guy. Lots of offensive tackles. You don't hear squat about edge rushers. You don't hear much about linebackers. You don't hear much about corners. I mean, I don't even think the average person knows who the number one defensive player off the board is going to be.
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure that I could come up with it either. The name that keeps popping up for me just because it's so memorable is I keep hearing the Niners late could end up with a Kool-Aid McKinstry. But that's about it. And well, I mean, I know there we've got our now I'm going to mess it up because Isaac got it wrong. But it's not Pork Johnson. It's Chop Robinson, right?
Chop Robinson.
That's one of them.
But all of a sudden now he's at the back half. Like you hear Dallas Turner or Arnold, the corner out of Alabama, could be someone. Or you mentioned Kool-Aid McKinstry. Both Alabama corners are going to go in the first round. But, you know, at some point, someone's got to talk about some of the defensive prospects. And I also want to ask Yammer, too, about the Marvin Harrison thing. I wonder if maybe, just maybe, if we aren't putting a little too much stock in the greatness that is Marvin Harrison Jr. So we'll get to Yam here in a couple of minutes. But right now, let's get to the Hot 5 at 5.
Oh. Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 with Isaac and Sue. Brought to you on the fan by Victorico's Mexican Food, the most popular burrito spot in Oregon. Online at victoricos.com. Number five.
Well, if you hated the NCAA transfer rule before, get ready to hate it even more. Because basically what the NCAA did today was they have approved unlimited transfers.
The Wild West just got wilder.
And when you hear unlimited transfers, it's not completely that way. There are still some guidelines here. But basically this, as long as you are academically eligible at your new school, and as long as you're progressing towards a degree, which, by the way, are very, very loose, vague terms.
Yeah, okay.
And schools have a wonderful way of massaging people's grades and keeping them, quote, moving towards a degree. You will be eligible immediately to play as many times as you want at as many schools as you want.
Now, have fun with that.
There are still two transfer windows, and you can't play for two teams in the same season. So if you start week four and then you decide I'm not happy here, you can't transfer into another school and then play week six.
I mean, that's just common sense, but thankfully that barrier is up.
So there are still some guidelines, but no more sitting there. You can transfer as much as you want. You don't need any of this BS, you know, I'm a grad transfer thing. The NBA, we got the playing games going on right now. Yesterday was the West. Today is the East. Got about 5.5 minutes left in the first one, and that's Miami and the Philadelphia 76ers. Right now, the Heat leading 37-30 right now over Philly. And then we have Hawks-Bulls tonight. And, of course, the winner of the Heat-Sixers game, they're automatically locked in to the seventh spot. And then the Hawks and Bulls, the winner of that, will play the loser of Miami and Philadelphia for the right to get your ass handed to you by the Boston Celtics.
But for the winner of this one, though, gets the New York Knicks. And a lot of people think that could be a series. So
yeah, with no Randall, you know, something to keep an eye on. And by the way, if you are Boston, you don't want to see Philly. If Philly loses this game, I have no doubt to me Philly ends up beating Atlanta and Chicago. And if you're Boston, like, you should be fine. Boston's really, really stinking good. But you don't want to see Philadelphia as a one seed. That's not what you want to see. Let's go with some Oregon State Beaver news. We got a couple football games added on the football schedule for the future of the Oregon State Beavers. The Beavers are going to play home and aways with Houston and Kansas State. The Beavers play Houston in now next year's schedule, 20 or I guess this year's 2024. That's all set.
Already set.
So this is 2025 and beyond. The Beavers are going to play Houston in Reser September 27th to 2025, and then they'll be on the road next year, 26 against Houston, and then the dates with Kansas State. By the way, this is a bit ambitious. We'll see if any of this actually come to fruition. But the Kansas State game is September 14th, 2030 in Manhattan. And then back in Corvallis in 2031.
What conference do you think they'll be in then?
Odds that those games
the Intergalactic Mars Conference?
Is like 15%. 15% those go down. But they are added to the schedule in the future. So there are games set up for Oregon State now in 2025, 2026, 2027, 8, and 9. Although the 2028 and 29 games, those are just one-offs against New Mexico and San Jose State.
Exciting.
Yeah, you know, buckle up for that one. Bad news out of Eugene as Oregon football defensive back Dalen Austin. He was a freshman last year, played in three games. He was a four-star recruit. He was arrested. He was arraigned today. He was released from custody, but he is being charged in connection with a fatal hit and run that occurred on Monday night. They are saying don't rest a judgment on this. It does appear that there are there was some sort of confrontation.
Some unique circumstances.
There was a man found deceased in the road. He had a wound to his neck. He also had a hammer. There's some different buzz going around that maybe there was an altercation previous to that, that maybe he was chasing Austin, but we'll just wait and see how this plays out. The Eugene Police Department said this is an ongoing investigation and not making any comments at the time other than he was arrested a couple hours after the fact at his apartment in Eugene and was arraigned today.
Number one
is Jonte Porter. Yes, that Jonte Porter, NBA star. Oh, wait, no one's ever heard of him. But the brother of the more famous Michael Porter, he has been officially banned for not one, not two, not three. That'd be life. He has been banned for life by the NBA commissioner. The NBA said in a statement, there is nothing more important than protecting the integrity of the NBA competition for our fans, our teams, and everyone associated with the sport, which is why Jonte Porter's blatant violations of our game rules are being met with the most severe punishment, that from Adam Silver, and he has been banned. So it turns out that he was indeed not participating in games on purpose to affect his prop bets.
His numbers, yep.
He was also betting on games that he was involved in, mm-hmm. including Toronto Raptor games, yep. and he was betting against his team, and he was also providing information to gamblers about games that he was or other players in the NBA were participating. Also the tune, by the way, of like $120,000.
Yeah, there. I know that one of the people he talked to had like an $80,000 parlay that when cash was going to pay $1.1 million on his unders. And of course they suspended the ticket because nobody would wager that much on Jonte Porter.
Like, how stupid can you be? Now, his bets, his smallest bet was $15. His largest bet was $22,000. And his total payout was $76,000, and his net winnings were $21,000.
So, yeah, you lost your career for $20,000.
Yes. And he, by the way, I mean, he was a two-way player, but, I mean, he had an NBA career.
Yeah, no, I mean, somebody said his earnings as an NBA player are already at, like, $2.3 million or something like that. So, you know, you could have just kept on that path.
For $21,000.
Yeah, and I did like how the NBA burned him in the release as well, mentioning that he lost those bets, by the way, the ones where he bet against his own team.
How stupid can you be? And by the way, let me just say, like, everyone, like, blaming gambling and all that. The gamblers are the ones that caught him.
This is proof that the system and the fence posts you have up work.
Yes.
It's like if you have an electric fence and it electrocutes a rabid animal trying to come on your property, your fence worked. It doesn't mean that you're not safe.
Although I did find it funny that Shams is the one that broke this story. And you know who Shams endorses?
That would be FanDuel.
FanDuel.
I saw somebody say, use the hashtag PorterBand for a $150 free roll.
Dumbass. Cost yourself a career for $21,000. Good work, my friend. Good work. All right, the Hot 5 at 5 brought to you by Victor Rico's Oregon's Best Burrito, online at victorrico.com. Also, their street tacos, delightful. When we come back, Mike Yam of the NFL Network.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Chance to talk a lot of NFL today, so we thought we'd reach out to one of my absolute favorite sports people in this whole wide world, former Pac-12 network man, now NFL network, and more importantly, award-winning author of Fried Rice and Marinara, 4.9 out of 5 stars on Amazon, the Yammer, Mike Yam. What's going on?
First of all, awesome introduction, man. I always appreciate you and having me on the show, man. And I appreciate you mentioned in the book, man. Certainly a huge passion project and have been very, very fortunate on that side. So any young readers out there, or at least parents of young readers, go and check out the book. I appreciate you.
I am an owner, although I have gifted it. We were going to a birthday party of a young person of a mixed race. And if you don't know, that's obviously the inception of Fried Rice and Marinara is you being a mixed race child and how that can, you know, cause some challenges and identity and all that. So I bought your book, Fried Rice and Marinara, and we gave it to a nice little 5-year-old friend of ours for a birthday present.
Oh, dude, man, that seriously is so awesome. I can't thank you enough, man. That is such an awesome story.
Well, that hits home for me. It really does, because, like, I mean, I am about as white as it gets. I look like an insurrectionist and a Viking and of pure Scandinavian descent. And then my kids are Korean. So I understand what that's like. My son, who is just so precious to me, my son looks nothing like me. He's a small Korean man who's now, 21. And his whole life, when we go places, people ask, are you adopted? Or when he introduces, yeah, hey, this is your dad. And we kind of laugh it off. But at the same time, it's a thing that not everyone understands, and I thought the book did a great job of addressing that. I'm a big fan, which is why I wanted to make sure that I gave that plug. If anyone is interested, again, you can find it at Barnes & Noble, all that. I think it's a really, really, it's a neat story for young kids, that for anyone, but especially of mixed race variety.
I appreciate you, man. Honestly, that means a ton, especially when you kind of attach it to that story, because you're right. It is, you can have those moments, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when you have to answer those questions pretty consistently, over time, it's like, damn, man. Like, but it's a real thing.
It's a real thing. And I know people don't necessarily mean it to be a slight or mean, but sometimes just think about it before you open your mouth with, hey, you look nothing like your dad or nothing like your mom. Like, maybe leave that one. Leave that one in the hip pocket.
Agreed.
I did want to talk about the NFL draft, and obviously, sure, so much, quarterback, receiver, offensive tackle. Like, I have not heard a single thing about defensive players in this draft. In fact, I've seen a lot of mocks where we may not get a defensive player off the board until 11 or 12. In fact, I don't think we've ever had a draft where we haven't gotten, I think maybe 8 is the latest we've had a defensive player. Are we going to break that this year?
It's kind of fascinating that you bring that up, because there's no question that there is such a heavy emphasis on some of these offensive players, especially with the quarterbacks. Look, every single year we cover the NFL draft, it's quarterbacks that are going to be all the rage. And specifically this year's class it's a good one. But then, to take it a step further, it just so happens that this year wide receivers and offensive linemen, specifically the tackles, are a really strong group. The wide receiver group, I think, is as deep as we've seen in recent years. And I think because of that, some of the other positions have taken a little bit of a back seat. Now, I do think there are some guys that certainly have the ability to be first round picks. We're definitely going to see, look, you get edge players that can get after the quarterback. Latu from UCLA, who obviously, us on the West Coast, we've probably seen a little bit more of him. Dallas Turner certainly comes to mind, the kid from Alabama. Florida State obviously had a really talented edge player in Jared Verse. Or for those who don't, obviously aren't as maybe familiar with his game, Chop Robinson is another player who I think from an athletic standpoint tested really well at the combine. I don't think Robinson necessarily is a lock for the first round, but he's one of those fringe guys that we could see. So those are definitely a couple names, at least in terms of the players up front. Peyton Wilson, I thought, had a really nice combine as well, one of those linebackers. Quinion Mitchell, corner from Toledo. He's another guy who I think, depending on which circles you're gravitating towards, there's a lot of buzz in a lot of different NFL circles about his potential. Terrion Arnold, another guy. So there's some talented defensive players, but Suk, I think to your point, we're focusing so much of our attention on which quarterbacks are going to go off the board. And because there's been movement, whether it's a JJ McCarthy, for example, or all these teams like the Broncos, I'll throw, the Vikings into the mix. The Giants, I think, want to move up. The Raiders could use a quarterback. I think it becomes this game of musical chairs, which has grabbed more of the national narrative.
Yeah. And then you mentioned, the wide receivers, and, I'm not trying to doubt Marvin Harrison Jr. Great player. Sure. Great player. I don't love that he didn't do anything. I don't love that he didn't want to test, didn't have a pro day. And when you look at some of the other receivers in this draft, and look, Marvin Harrison is a fine, big physical receiver, but you look at today's NFL, so much of it is the middle of the field. Tight ends, slot receivers, and you look at some of the receivers that have been dominant the last handful of years, they're not necessarily top five players. Am I crazy in thinking that maybe we're making a little too much of Marvin Harrison Jr. because of the name?
So I think name is certainly a reason why we're probably spending a little less attention on what he didn't do during this entire process. Dad obviously had a ton of success. I will say this. I think there's some fatigue as we get closer to the draft. This is, you know, candidly with Marvin specifically, we've talked about him as an NFL player for 2 years.
Yes.
So as you get closer and you have this buildup over a 2 year span, and then over the last 2 or 3 months, it's all right, well, who were some of these other guys? Who were those other risers? Who else could make a splash in a deep class? Guys are going to have conversations like this. I still think Harrison is the first wide receiver off the board. I don't know if Arizona is going to sit with that fourth pick. In fact, I don't think they will remain at four. I think they trade down because of the market for the quarterbacks. But the reality is anyone, whether it's Harrison, Roma Dunze, or Malik Nabers, I think there's a legit argument for all three of them being studs. Daniel Jeremiah, he's our lead draft analyst at NFL Network. You know, outside of Caleb Williams, 2, 3, and 4 on his big board of his top 50 are Harrison, Rome, and Nabers. So if that goes to show you, like, yo, these guys could play, I don't know what other direction or how else to characterize it, because I really do think all three of those guys are going to be studs, and I do like Harrison. I mean, there was so much wow factor watching him at Ohio State.
Yeah, I look at it, and I'll take Arizona sitting there at four, and I'm not saying I don't want Marvin Harrison, but if someone wants to give me two extra picks, I'm happy to take a Dunze and another one and a three, as opposed to Marvin Harrison, where when I look at the NFL and you go through everything from, you know, let's take the Rams with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp or Tyreek Hill and St. Brown and, you know, Michael Pittman, Keenan Allen, Stephon Diggs.
Sure.
Like, these aren't top five players. This is the one position I look at in the NFL where I say, I know I can, if I trust my evaluation, I can find good players in every round of the draft, like not just good players, but impact players.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, look, from an Arizona perspective, I think you're right. Chicago is a little different, you know, picking at the top of the draft, but generally speaking, if you have one of those top five, you know, top 10 picks, you didn't have a great season. That's the reality. And a team like Arizona, I throw New England into the mix as well. They're so far off from being a highly competitive football team because of all the holes on their offense, then I'm with you. I think there's a real argument to accumulate more picks, move down in the draft, still have another first rounder, and find more impact players. Now, could you make the argument that Marvin Harrison might have a bigger impact than, you know, the wide receiver that they get, I don't know, in round two? Sure, you could make that argument. Is that delta big enough to say, hey, maybe I get an offensive tackle that's going to be sitting, you know, on my offensive line for 10 years plus a really good wide receiver in round number two? Like, I think that's why these GMs are getting paid what they're getting paid to answer those questions.
Yeah, I just love accumulating picks. Unless it's a guy that I quarterback, I'm a big believer of, I would rather have three high level quality players than one star, if that star isn't a quarterback. I just think when you look around the NFL, with the exception of that position, there's very few guys, and I'm not trying to get into a gambling, there's very few players in the league that move the needle even 1 point as far as a spread. So I think it's the ultimate team sport, minus if you don't have the signal caller, then you don't have anything.
So I'm with you there. Here's the only pushback that I will have, because I agree with your premise wholeheartedly. And look, quarterback is a different beast. Yeah. But I don't know where what you subscribe to. But there's the school of thought of, you know, the positional the point system in the draft. Like, hey, you know, this round, this pick is worth this much.
Yeah.
And some people will say, hey, positional value, you can't draft a guy really high. So prime example, running backs. We're going to talk about these guys for, you know, the last couple of years and now the next few years moving forward about that position being devalued. And yet I saw two of them go in the first round, in Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs. Mm. And I know that there were definitely some Lions fans that are like, oh my God, what are we doing? We can't be taking a guy, you know, a running back this early in Jahmyr Gibbs. And I would make the argument that, hey, if you feel so confident in your front office and player evaluation, where you feel like, hey, this is going to be a guy for the next 5 to 6 years who could be a Pro Bowler, why not take him in the first round? So I'm with you. Look, if you're that far from competing, and Detroit was in a different situation, right? Like, the Lions felt like they were ready to compete at a high level. Clearly that was accurate. They were the darlings of last year's offseason, had a great year this past season. But to pick Gibbs 12 overall, I think they were in a unique position to do that. Had this been the Detroit Lions of old, I don't know if, you know, we go down this path using that 12th pick on a running back.
Yeah, we're talking to Mike Yam, NFL Network. I couldn't agree more. I think there's a difference between like what you said, whether you're talking about a team, you mentioned Detroit, or I'm trying to think of another team, that you would put in this category, a team that you feel like you're on the cusp, Cincinnati, if the breaks go right, Jacksonville feels that way. Hey, if the breaks go right, we're not necessarily a championship team right now, but we think we're a contender. Versus when I look at, let's say, New England or Washington, sure, you got holes across the board. One player minus a quarterback isn't turning around the Patriots. They're not turning around Washington. I need dudes. And so regardless of who I love outside of a quarterback, for those teams, I need bodies. And so I do think there's a difference in talent acquisition depending on what your roster. That I couldn't agree
totally
with.
Totally. But think about this. When we assess the top 10 right now, so Chicago, Washington, New England, Arizona, Chargers, Giants, Titans, right?
Titans.
At seven.
And
Titans, then Falcons, Bears, and Jets.
Yep.
So that whole group, generally speaking, I don't know how ready that most of those teams are to winning right now. Now,
sure,
I can make an argument. Chicago, I feel really good about their chances with two guys in the top 10. They've invested this offseason. Yep. So Chicago, I think, has got a chance to be a playoff team. Chargers now, I think, is really intriguing at five. New regime, different wide receiver crew. They already got the quarterback. So how far is that team? The Giants, I'm a Giants fan. Zook, I don't know if you realize that. I'm from the Northeast originally.
Sorry.
I know. It's a little tough sledding here. Some would argue, hey, the G-men want to move up to grab a quarterback. Yeah. I would say, hey, you got a lot of holes. Would one of those wide receivers be an impact to a Daniel Jones who hasn't had a stud wide receiver the last couple of years? You could make that argument. So generally speaking, in my mind, Atlanta's got to feel like in that division, they're really close. The Jets, we've joked about that. I don't know which direction you think the Jets go. People are talking about Brock Bowers going there. Some would say, hey, offensive line, you got to shore that up, making sure, Aaron Rodgers is able to play more than just a couple snaps to start a season. So I'm with you. I think each team has to assess what they have, where they're at with their current roster, and what they think they could be this season.
You brought it up in the Brock Bowers. I've seen Bowers everywhere from, 10 all the way down to 20. This is the one I don't get. In a league, especially if you've got a young quarterback, I know that the Jets wouldn't fall into that, but even with that you're trying to protect, so much of this game is won now. Play action pass, under center, control the middle of the field. Look at what Laporta does. Look at what Travis Kelce does. Look at Mark Andrews. We all fall in love with the outside receiver, but the slot receivers and the tight ends are driving this league right now. And I do not recall, no offense to Kyle Pitts, no offense, I have never seen in my 20 years of doing this what I consider to be a better prospect tight end than Brock Bowers. Why isn't he getting more love?
I have no idea.
I love
especially,
it.
Especially, how can you not? I mean, look, a year ago, that tight end class in the draft was as good as we've seen. And I'll just quote, Jeremiah on this one. I think he said it was as good of a tight end class as he's ever seen before, or at least in the last 10 or 15 years, right? You can put a disclaimer on that. I think it's pretty accurate based off of what we saw a year ago.
Sure.
And I'll tell you this. You talk to most people in NFL circles, and they'll tell you that Brock Bowers would have been the first tight end off the board in last year's draft. That's how talented this guy really is. So to your point, I don't know why he's not necessarily getting more attention. I don't think he falls outside of the top 10. I think there's a team that feels like they are so close, right? And maybe it's I'm spitballing here, Cincinnati.
Sure.
Cincinnati goes, we could use a dude like that. How do we make that happen? How do we move up? Because if you're fringe, 11, 12, sort of in that range, you got an opportunity. And here's, the draft is going to play out how it's going to play out. But let's just say hypothetically, the first four or six of the first 8 to 9 picks are quarterbacks. That changes the complete complexion of this entire thing, because all of a sudden a team Minnesota, let's say they can't move up, or Denver can't move up. If they don't get that quarterback that they need, they might be willing to move down in the draft, right? Collect some of those picks and assets and allow a team like Cincinnati at 18, for example, or pick any team that's, wants a tight end like that or feels like they are close to move up and swap one of those picks to go and get a difference maker.
Yeah. Like if I'm the Indianapolis Colts and I've got a young quarterback that maybe struggles to read the field a little bit, coming off an injury, and his best friend is going to be a run game, play action pass, whatever it takes for me to get Brock Bowers, sign me up. That is a security blanket for any quarterback, whether you're talking about a team ready to contend or, again, a young player, a young quarterback that you're trying to grow and develop. It can absolutely be his best friend. I know we got to cut you loose here, but give me, of all the quarterbacks, there's always one, we do this every time where we fall in love with quarterbacks, there's going to be one that slides, whether it's a couple spots or all the way down. Who do you think, if we're talking about the five potential first round quarterbacks, who do you think is the guy that maybe ends up slipping a bit?
Oh, well, I don't know how you feel about the order, but we'll just throw Caleb, Jaden, Drake May, Penix, JJ McCarthy, and Bo Nix. So if there's six dudes, I think it's probably Bo, but I'm going to be honest with you, Suk. Like, I don't think he falls out of the first round.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be such a run of quarterbacks early. And because teams need that guy, I mean, there's legitimately seven or eight teams that I think could make an argument to go and draft it. And the reality is I just name checked six of those quarterbacks. So I think Bo, if he, and I'll use the quotes, the air quotes around slides, I think he's still a first round pick.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very interesting draft, because like anytime quarterbacks are involved, you know, there's going to be a run on them. You know, there's going to be movement and trades up and down.
Sure.
I think we're going to get a very, very active first round of the NFL draft, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, man. And like I said, it's always good to be with you, dude. So next, I don't know, post-draft, let's do this again.
Absolutely. He's Mike Yam. You can find him on the NFL Network. And again, I want to recommend it. You can find it at Barnes & Noble. You can find it on Amazon. Fried Rice and Marinara, and I thought you would enjoy this. This comes to us via our Vancouver Ford text line that came in while we were talking. I'm Korean. My wife is blonde and blue eyes. Fried Rice and Marinara has been read and beloved by all three of my kids. That one from P1 Rufio.
Yes.
So
just
thought I'd throw that out there.
That is amazing.
For you. Yep.
I appreciate it. By the way, it's animated and it's on YouTube now. And that's totally free. So it's an animated version. And the group that did it is a company called Vooks, which is Portland based. I got connected with them because of our good friend Lamar Hurd with the Portland Trailblazers. There's some Oregon State ties that are there as well. So a local Portland company that's trying to kill it right now, and they're crushing it. They're doing an awesome job with animated children's stories. So
very cool.
Encourage some people to check that out.
Go check it out. Get the book. Check it out on YouTube. And again, find them on NFL Network. Yammer, one of my favorites. Always appreciate catching up with you. And let's do it again after the draft.
Anytime, man. Take care.
There you go. One of the really, really nice guys in the business. And when we come back, we'll touch upon some NFL draft stuff, kind of some thoughts of there, what we were chewing on. And before we head into Club 1080, here, though, Buck with SportsCenter.
Like the flick of a switch.
This song is sneaky, like one of my favorites. I first heard this. This was in the... It's the Jack Nicholson movie with Greg Kinnear and Helen Hunt.
As Good as It Gets?
As Good as It Gets, right? It's like they're in, there's a scene where they're going on a drive, and he puts together, he's like this neurotic, obsessed guy, so he puts together like a road trip mix, and this is the, like he starts off.
I forgot about that scene, yeah.
Yeah, he starts off with like YMCA or something.
And he's hyper aware and almost paranoid about what's on the mix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's like, everyone's like, oh my God. He goes, no, I'm just kidding. I've got good stuff. And he launches into this. That's the first time I heard this song. And I was like, oh, dude, I love it. I think it's Van Morrison.
That's right. Van Morrison. Very solid.
So whenever I hear this, I think of that scene. It's funny that I'm a big movie guy, but there's just so many times that a song will attach itself to a movie.
Sure.
And it's a really good movie, but I wouldn't say it's like one of my favorites or whatever.
No, but you hear the song and you think of that moment.
Yes. It's just that moment. It will forever be that scene of them driving in a Volvo or Saab convertible.
Yeah, yep.
You know, with his driving gloves. Because, like, I remember doing that, like, going to college, like, having road trip mixes.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Now it's, you know, it's... doesn't matter, you got Spotify or whatever, you can just type in road trip.
You wanted that thing to slap. You wanted all the songs to be good. You didn't want any disappointments on there.
Yeah, so like anytime I was getting ready to drive to school, you know, it's like a 14-hour drive, 14, 15 hours depending on how you drive it. So, you know, I would always make sure that you had like two or three CDs or tapes, you know, if you want. You'd always have a couple of those ready to go. And there was an art to building a great mixtape. And, you know, because when you're driving, you don't necessarily want, like Metallica's my favorite band. You can't have, like...
You can't do 15 straight hours. I mean, exactly. You can try, but you shouldn't.
Well, then you're going to get a speeding ticket. Because I'm telling you, like, when Creeping Death comes on, you're not driving the speed limit. Creeping Death is like when you hit Eastern Oregon and you're going to go 110. You're putting the hammer down. Or when you're trying to finish out the drive. But when you're in the middle, when you're in like hour three or four and you know you got 10 plus hours ahead, you need something a little more calm. You need something a little more relaxing.
Van Morrison just might do that for you.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with some Van Morrison. We were talking to Mike Yam of the NFL Network there with the draft. And I just, going back to the Marvin Harrison thing, I'm not saying that Marvin Harrison is a bust, far from it. But I think that we, as a collective, I don't know anymore if there is a position that we overvalue more than wide receiver. I just really don't. Like, if we undervalue running backs and we're like, we devalue it.
That's probably fair.
The wide receiver is the overvalue.
The only one that I would say, and not because the position is, but I feel like we are so desperate for people to be good edge rushers that sometimes we say guys are great edge rushers when they're not because the position is so crucial.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, and you are seeing more and more teams now. Look at the Niners. Like, it is not about having one edge rusher anymore. It's about having four and five guys.
You
can rotate through. And the idea, too, that, like, would you rather have a dominant interior guy, Aaron Donald, Fletcher Cox, something like this, than you would just a pure edge rusher? Because we make way too much of sack stats. Oh, he got 12 sacks. Cool. How many of those were worthless? Did you have three of them against a bad left tackle? How many of those were to close out games? So now you move more into like pressure rate and things like that. But yeah, I get where you're going with that we overvalue or we can edge rushers. But
not because I think that the position isn't so crucial, but I feel like we're so desperate to find the right guys that we sometimes prop up guys who aren't that great at football players because they're athletic freaks that we expect to be dominant on the edge.
No, we love gaudy numbers, you know, on the outside.
Yeah.
And I just, how many of those actually like, oh, well, he needs a receiver. Does he? Like, you know, you go through and you know, you look at like a guy like CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb's a really good receiver. Does CeeDee Lamb and his 135 catches, is that the end all to be all for the Dallas Cowboys? Like, they win nothing.
Could they find another guy that does exactly what CeeDee Lamb does?
That's my point. The difference between CeeDee Lamb and Michael Pittman and Keenan Allen and Stephon Diggs and A.J. Brown, Devontae Adams, like, I think... Take your pick.
A couple guys are serious game breakers, but after that, there's a tier where there's a lot of really good players, and a lot of them seem interchangeable, maybe.
And I think you can find a ton of them.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, again, that Marvin Harrison isn't going to be a great player, but if I'm sitting there at four and my roster needs players and Arizona needs players and someone wants to move up to take Marvin Harrison Jr., be my guest. And that was my whole point I was making with Yam. I would much rather have the fourth best receiver on the board. I'll even go further. If you want to give me Marvin Harrison or you want to give me Ladd McConkey, the Georgia slot receiver, who's going to go 28 in the draft, but you give me 2 second round, I move from four down to 28 and you give me 2 second round picks to go with that. Done. I'll take a slot receiver in the NFL. I just think more and more in the NFL is being one in the middle of the field. I love slot receivers and I love tight ends. You know, so many teams now are playing cover two and taking away the outside. I can roll coverage to a receiver. Cool. And by the way, Marvin's not a big yards after catch guy. It's the one thing he doesn't do particularly well.
Would you say, just from an X's and O's standpoint, it is harder to pass off guys underneath? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
It is. That's why you see guys like Puka Nacua that kill it. You see guys that are great route runners. You see guys that can operate over the middle. It's also why you see a lot of really good offenses that are leaning on what? Tight ends. I would rather, and this, you can call me crazy. If you said I could have the 10th best receiver in the NFL and the best tight end, or I can do the inverse of that, right? Give me the best receiver in the NFL, whoever you think that is, Devontae Adams or, you know, whoever, Jamar Chase, Jefferson, all great receivers. But you give me the 10th best tight end, I'll take the tight end. Give me the tight end and the 10th best receiver. Because
you're right there.
The 10th best receiver in this league, let's just go off of last year, you're going to get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. you're talking about, by the way, that is Ja'Marr Chase.
And that maybe isn't okay. Totally fair because Burrow was hurt last
fine.
Year some.
But DJ Moore?
There you
Garrett
go.
Wilson.
There you go.
Chris Olave.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I'll take that. You give me that in Travis Kelce?
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine.
And you know what just came to mind, too?
Give me that in Sam LaPorta. I'm good.
You think about the last four teams standing in the NFL? They all had elite tight ends. George Kittle, Travis Kelce, and then you had Mark Andrews. I know he was banged up a lot, but the Ravens used that position really well. And Sam LaPorta, one of the best young tight ends in the game.
When you look at teams that are succeeding in the NFL, they have a run game, they have a play action game, and they own the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And what does all of that entail? Finding a tight end. Finding a tight end that I can give you a run look, I can give you a pass look, all in the same, and I can run play action out of it, and I can dominate the middle of the field. You want to run two deep safeties? You want to keep everything in front of you? Cool. I will own the middle of the field with Travis Kelce. When you have a tight end that knows what he's doing, how many times do we sit there and look at Travis Kelce? And I know last year was a bit of a down year for him until he got to the postseason. But you look up and you're like, why is no one covering him? Because linebackers and safeties can't. And it's really hard to roll coverage and take away tight ends. I can take away an elite receiver on the outside. It's really hard to take away a tight end, especially if I can threaten you with running the ball. And why Brock Bowers isn't talked about... Marvin Harrison and Adunze and all that, those are great players. You know, if there's one offensive skilled player that I want in this draft, I want Brock Bowers.
Great question from the Vancouver Ford text line then. It says, what would you do if you were the Chargers in the fifth spot? Where let's assume that four quarterbacks get taken first or four quarterbacks and a receiver. Do you rather take Brock Bowers or trade down and try to fill holes on your roster?
I would trade down and still take Brock Bowers because he's going to be there at 12. So if you told me that I can take whoever the Chargers are going to take, or I can move down a few spots, although the Chargers are, they're at what? I got to look. Are they at 9 or are they at 11? Scroll. They're at 11, right? All right. Then yes. At 11, I would just take Brock Bowers. And they may go O-line. And by the way, they're going to go O-line because Jim Harbaugh has a stiffy for O-linemen. They're either going to take Fuaga, the tackle out of Oregon State. Maybe they go with the tackle out of Washington. They're going to take a tackle. And that's fine. You're going to go an O-lineman. But if I'm the Chargers and I'm taking a skilled player, give me a tight end. And maybe, by the way, that Harbaugh looks at that because what does Harbaugh want to do? Run the ball, play action pass, own the middle of the field. Brock Bowers to the Chargers, and if I'm Justin Herbert, I go to Jim Harbaugh and say, please.
Thank you.
Please? Can we take Brock Bowers at 11? Because, yeah, you can't trade back from 11 and probably get Bowers. As much as I've seen some drafts have him at 19 or 20, I got to believe somewhere in the 10 to 14 range he's going to go. But if I was sitting there at 6 or 5, and my choice was one of the receivers – or move back 5 spots and get an extra pick in Brock Bowers all day long.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
I just think I can find receivers.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Look around the NFL at the guys that are great. A lot of them are not top 10 picks.
And it's a position where, and I don't know if it's just because of the nature of the guy that plays the position, but they often are positions that are discontent, and they get moved around a lot, too. A.J. Brown got moved from the Titans to the Eagles. You got Stephon Diggs moved from the Bills over to the Texans. Like, it's not whether you draft one or whether you want to acquire one via free agency or trade, they're not hard to come by, it doesn't feel like.
No, and that's just kind of my thing, is I feel that they're just available. Oh, and by the way, I don't know what I was looking at. The Chargers are at 5.
Yeah, that's what that's what the text said too. So that's what I thought was.
Well,
I looked at it.
The one that I pulled up was that they were saying that there was a trade and that the Chargers had moved back. But yes, they're sitting there at 5. They're sitting there at 5. So yeah, if I'm sitting there, I'm trading back. I just am, because I want at 5. If I can move back to, let's say, 10 or 12.
Yeah, stay in or near the top 10.
Could I get my tackle and my tight end?
Yeah.
As opposed to taking someone at number 5.
Mm-hmm.
Can I move back, acquire an extra pick, and end up with Brock Bowers? And let's say I get Brock Bowers at, 13. And then I can get another pick somewhere in the 20s and land a tackle and Brock Bowers. I would much rather have that than whoever I'm going to get at number 5. I'm a tight end slot guy. To me, when I'm building my roster, and I think Harbaugh is kind of in line with this, run game, control the middle of the field, I think is where you win in today's NFL. Speaking of winning in today's NFL, the winningest coach of all time. No one wants to win with him. Good story out of ESPN today on Bill Belichick and will he ever coach again? We'll talk about that before we move on to Club 1080 right here on The Fan. I may not have time to get to the Bill Belichick story. Maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow. Really good read, though. We've actually reached out to the authors of the piece. But we're starting to get some more clarity on exactly what went down with Bill Belichick. Because it felt like, especially with the dynasty, the documentary that came out and him not getting a job, that we were kind of all taking a victory lap on the grave of Bill Belichick. And
really, in really short order after he was done.
Yeah. And there was a really good look at what went down and how he didn't get hired. And it does sound like he had one job offer, not even an offer. He was only really considered by one team, and that was Atlanta. And between the owner and the top executives, when they put together their list of who they wanted, they said he wasn't on anyone's top three. And apparently Robert Kraft called Arthur Blank, who's friends, to tell him, don't do it. Said he isn't trustworthy.
Which he is now denying that he did.
Yeah, even though you know he did that. So it's just funny.
The people who wrote this story aren't going out on a limb on a guess on that.
No. They're just kind of, it's interesting how he really has gone from the unquestioned GOAT. I mean, it's not, before Brady left, there was no debate. Bill was the greatest coach of all time. Hands down. It wasn't Shula, it wasn't Lombardi, anybody.
It's already been addressed.
It was Bill. Eight Super Bowls, six as a head coach, two as a coordinator. The greatest dynasty in modern football history, not even close. Went to what, three other Super Bowls that they lost? They lose three? Lost to
they lost to Philly.
Philly
they
twice.
They lost to the Rams.
No, they didn't lose to the Rams. So I think they lost three, because they lost to the Giants twice.
But they beat the Rams, right.
And
Philly.
And Philly. So I think, yeah, I think they lost three Super Bowls. So he went to, what, nine as a head coach? Like, it's just, it was unquestioned. And now he's kind of viewed as this archaic old man stuck in his ways that no one wants. And by the way, he's not getting a job next year either. It's not happening. And I said this when he got canned in New England, and everyone thought I was crazy. And believe me, I've said lots of dumb things on the air, but this one I felt pretty good about. I said he's not going to coach in the NFL again. No one's going to want him. And here we are a year later without a job and really no prospects next year either. Like, he can say all he wants that he's interested in the Dallas job, Philly job, Giants job, which, by the way, they all still have coaches. There's no guarantee that they're going to fire anyone. And if they do fire him, you're going to hire a 74 or 75-year-old Bill Belichick?
Well, it's a weird kind of a conundrum, because you're not going to hire him for a rebuild.
Nope.
And if your team is already a contender, don't you likely have a coach that you think can help make them contend, that is already contending? I mean, the only situation that I think would make a ton of sense is maybe a situation like the Eagles, where there's a ton of talent, everyone agrees the roster's ready to win, but they're maybe done with a Sirianni or something like
the
that.
Other
but
one
like,
that they, the other one they pointed out in the piece, though, is they said that everyone believes that when you bring him in, you're only bringing him in for 15 wins. As soon as
right.
he...
Right, once he hits the all-time record, then he checks out.
Then he checks out. Or, you know, again, at his age, you're not keeping him around for 5 years. And in order to bring him in, you have to change everything. You really have to do a teardown. Otherwise, why are you bringing him in?
And if he gets those, you know, if he gets 8 wins a season for 2 seasons and he's done, then you tear everything out, everything down, you build it back up, and
yes.
you have to start over again after that.
There's only one way for him to work, and that's the Bill way. And there's no place that has that in place. There's no one that has that culture. It's just, it's not a thing anymore. So no one's going to do it. So it's weird how quickly he fell from grace, from being the unquestioned GOAT to now being unemployable. And it's not happening anytime soon. So maybe we'll get into some more of the details on that tomorrow, I mean, when Rob's back. Because I know Rob's, you know, we've talked about the whole, you know, Rob thinks Bill's getting a little bit of an unfair rap. And I think it's a little bit more of you kind of reap what you sow. But a really good piece, if you want to go read that, I think it was Seth Wickersham and a couple others that had it.
Yeah, Seth Wickersham, Jeremy Fowler, and one other. But we're trying to see if we can effort an interview with one of those guys.
ESPN.com. All right, we come back. Copa Asahi, Club 1080, coming up next here on The Fan.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.